Recorder. All right. I'm going to read as far as we've come, including what we're going to be studying tonight. A woman of valor who can find. She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She is like the ships of a merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, he plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength, and she makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. And it's my hope that for all of us, as we work our way through this text, and it becomes part of our thinking and part of the way we see our world and the world around us, that these images that we're learning about will begin to take dimension. And when you're living your daily life and you have a task at hand or you have a situation, you are able to conjure her up, and she will lead you and she will inform you. And I can honestly say that is beginning to happen for me more and more in my life. And that is why I'm hoping that even after we end the study in a few weeks, that this text just becomes part of your mental landscape. And you become familiar with her and acquainted with her for the rest of your life. Okay? I might. There we go. So every day we get up, and one of the first things we do is we decide what to wear. All right? And we open our closet, or we pick it up off the floor. And it's dependent upon the weather. It might depend upon our mood. It might depend upon where we're going, the occasion. But we choose what to wear. The only thing that prevents a grown woman from choosing her own clothes is if A, she's not healthy, all right? If something's wrong or she's ill, then that person can't choose her own garment. What else would prevent someone from being able to choose their own garment?
A work requirement, like you have to wear uniforms.
Okay, so that it designates you're assigned what to wear. Immaturity. I mean, a little girl needs help, even though they don't think they do. So if you're a mom of a little girl, you probably had that conversation where she puts out her outfit and you think, not on my life. So the choice we make depends on a lot of things. And it's built in to most little girls, especially, to want to pick their own clothes, because putting on our garment is intrinsic to femininity. All right? This is significant. The woman of valor dresses herself. She's not immature, and she's healthy. So she's able to choose her own garment for whatever day, whatever situation is at hand. Now, what garment am I talking about? We'll find out. Remember at the beginning of the study, for those of you who were here, I said this passage, this text of the woman of valor is really unique because each verse is like an acrostic and a letter of the Hebrew alphabet is assigned for each verse. And I said that would be an awesome study in and of itself, but we didn't have time to do that. But tonight I want to bring it to bear because I looked at this and I thought, you know, that's just so cool. The Hebrew letter that's assigned to this verse tonight is the letter Chet. And it's the eighth letter in the Hebrew alphabet. And for those of you who know Hebrew, you understand that the letter Chet is made of several letters, but it pretty much looks like this. And what does it mean, those of you who've taken Hebrew? What does this letter tend to mean?
Offense.
Okay, and it also means life. It's to life, okay?
talk about how this letter in particular is shaped like a yoke. Like a yoke. What is a yoke?
A yoke is that thing that connects two animals so they can work side by side and accomplish much. A verse from the New Testament should immediately come to mind as we talk about a yoke. It's in Matthew chapter 11, verse 29, and Yeshua talks about how we are yoked together with him and that his yoke is easy and his burden is light. Come to me, you who are weary. Be yoked to me, and we will walk through life together, yoked together. And I think this is really, really significant as we talk about how this woman of valor chooses her clothing of strength and she dresses herself, because I was thinking about our armor. Because not only does this verse say she dresses herself with strength, but the original language infers that she girds herself, girds her loins in particular. And what that denotes is in the old times when you would have a long robe and you were walking along and suddenly a situation came that required you to like engage it with a lot of action and intensity, you would pick up your robe, you would either tighten a knot or tuck it in your belt so you could make tracks. So that's the image that we have here. She girds her loins with strength, or she dresses herself with strength. All right. So I immediately spent some time in Ephesians chapter 6 this week. Let's go ahead and turn there. You've read it before. Talks about putting on God's armor. Because we also remember that the word valor is a military word, which means strong. It means warrior. Okay. Yes, it's a feminine term, but she has strength. Chapter 6, verse 12, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in heavenly places. Therefore, take up the full armor of God so that you will be able to resist in the evil day, having done everything to stand firm. And here's the armor. Stand firm, therefore, having girded your loins with truth. All right, the woman of valor, truth is always central. Having put on the breastplate of righteousness, having shod your feet with a preparation of the gospel of peace, and in addition to all, taking up the shield of faith with which you will be able to extinguish all of the flaming arrows of the evil one. And also take the helmet of salvation and the sword of the Spirit, which is the word of God. And then it goes on. Here's what I recognized and discovered years ago that is so amazing. In the chapter, in the book of Isaiah, chapter 59, verse 17, God lists his own armor because he's a warrior on our behalf, right? And guess what his armor is? It's the same armor that he asks us to take up. Because he's the one that provides it. So he puts his armor, he offers it to us, but we have to dress in it. But it's his very own armor. Isaiah 59, 17. I guess we can turn there for a moment. It's worth taking a moment. And the reason I think this is so significant is we're yoked together with him, and we're commanded to wear armor for our journey through this life, but he says, I'm not only yoked with you, but the very armor that defines who I am is the armor that I will make available to you. So that's what she dresses herself in. Did anyone find Isaiah 59:17? Go ahead and read that.
And you put on righteousness as a breastplate and a helmet of deliverance on his head, and you put on garments of vengeance for clothing, and wrapped himself with ardor as a mantle.
He wraps himself with zeal as a mantle. that describes our God, the husband of this woman of valor. And we're yoked with him. And he asks us to dress ourselves with strength for battle, to gird our loins so that we are ready and able to take on whatever is the next thing in the path of our life. And he says, here, it's the armor that I have. I'm making my very own armor available to you. You know, ever since Eve kind of blew it in the garden and she donned herself with fig leaves, clothing has served several purposes. Because up until that time, as we all know, they were naked and not ashamed. So as we think about what role clothing plays, clothing's a big deal. We're going to be talking about it in a few weeks at length. But I wanted to mention a few things that is important about clothing. Clothing reveals and clothing conceals. Clothing conceals shame and it reveals glory. Think of a queen. Remember how we're called to live like royalty? Think about a queen. Think about how her clothing reveals her glory and tells the world her position, but it also conceals the parts that are shameful to be just shown anytime and everywhere. So clothing is meant to have the same function in our life, right? And you might think nothing you could put on is going to be queenly, particularly the uniform that you have to wear to work. But it's an internal thing. It's how we carry ourselves. It's how we consider the way we're walking out this life in this world. And yeah, it's going to express itself in the clothing that we choose. But we are supposed to carry ourselves in a way that shame is concealed and glory is revealed. All right? I don't ever want to leave the house. I don't ever want to leave the house undressed for what the day holds for me. Have you ever had the dream where you get somewhere and you show up? Usually for me, I'm on a stage and there's a spotlight and I'm supposed to say something and I not only forget my lines, but I look down and I forgot to get dressed. And you're in the middle of, you know, a crowd and there's nowhere to run. It's a horrible dream. Spiritually, it's worse to show up and suddenly be exposed because you're not dressed. But the woman of valor chooses her clothing every day, and she dresses herself with what? With strength. And here's the thing. She chooses strength, but you get dressed every day, and you have to choose strength every day. And if you don't put it on, you're not going to have it on, and you're going to get where you're going, and you're going to be embarrassed because you're not going to be dressed. All right? So how do you dress with strength? Part of it is remembering that you do have an armor. Part of it is remembering that you can choose strength. I really believe that most of the battle in life is knowing that you can choose to be strong. One of the things that I'll often say to somebody when they're faced with a really, really challenging situation is, you can do this. You can do this. And that's one of the things I want to hear people who care about me and who know the truth say to me when I'm faced with a really challenging situation. Robin, you can do this. Because me knowing I can do it and me choosing to put on strength is the battle. Because if I tell myself, I can't do this, I am not strong enough for this, I'm not dressed, and I won't be strong enough, and I won't be able to do it. You choose it. You choose it. She dresses herself with strength and dignity, and she laughs at the future. That's a few verses down in our text, but obviously it's tied to this sentence as well. And you know what? There's a really big difference between false poise and real inner dignity, isn't there? We looked at a verse in a passage in Isaiah in chapter 16 where the women instead of putting on strength and instead of having true dignity, put on false poise, and they pranced around, as the passage describes. And it says that their bracelets tinkled and they fluttered their eyelashes, and they were behaving according to the cues that they were receiving from this realm. And further down in that chapter, it makes it clear that the men of that place could no longer take up their swords and win a battle. They fell. Because the women, who were the stronghold, who were the rampart, were no longer choosing strength. And they were no longer putting on their strength and dignity. And they were listening to the cues, the voices of the lower animal realm. And so that's how they were behaving, and the entire culture imploded. It really describes where we live today. It really does. If you want to take a closer look at that, it's in the third chapter of Isaiah. Isaiah 3:16 is their passage. I wish we had time to really look at that. It's fascinating. So humble composure is the true sign of spiritual maturity. Have you ever heard the word equanimity? Do you know what equanimity is? A few of us have studied Musar together. It was a new word for me a few years ago, and now it's become one of my favorite words. Equanimity means that you are able to maintain an inner balance in a physical world that is usually very, very turbulent. It's that inner peace. It's that inner calm, no matter what is going on. And the reason you can have it is because you got up in the morning and you chose the garment of strength and you put it on. Beautiful garments, strength and dignity. Laughter? Why does she laugh? In Proverbs 31:25 says, she dresses herself with strength, and she dresses herself with dignity, and she laughs at the future. What is laughter? Laughter is a really spiritual thing. Can anyone try to define it? Laughter is what happens when two opposite things kind of collide. Two unexpected opposite things collide. Let's think of an example. A classic one is a man who acts all dignified in his suit and ties, walking down the sidewalk, and there's a banana peel and he slips on it. And there's something so opposite between a man dressed for his executive meeting 1 minute and lying on the sidewalk with a banana peel under his heel the next. It's just something you didn't expect to happen. The word Isaac, Itzhak, means laughter. There's a passage where the king looks out the window and sees Itzhak, Isaac, and Rebecca, and they're behaving as husband and wife, which means they are making love to some extent. And the Hebrew word that describes what is happening between them is the word laughter. Because there's nothing more unusual than two opposite male and female that manage to make their way toward one another and connect. That is true laughter, isn't it? True laughter. So this woman of valor dresses herself with strength and dignity, and she laughs at the future. Why does she laugh at the future? I'll tell you why she laughs at the future. Because she knows that the day is coming when there is no division anymore. Physical realm and the spiritual realm no longer collide, they no longer contradict, and you're no longer in a tug of war between the two. They melt together and they're one again. In that day, his name will be one and we will be one. We will see and we will know as we are seen and known, and everything will be reconciled. And so she knows that all the things in this life that right now don't seem to make sense, because you can't see the whole context, and you're required to operate in a very loud, chaotic place with a lot of challenges and different messages coming at you. And sometimes, most of the time, no, all the time, the way that God calls us to walk is a higher walk and a lonelier walk and a different walk than the majority around you, right? But this woman of valor can laugh at the future because she knows there's a day that everybody from the beginning of time to the end of the time are going to agree on truth, and there's not going to be any contradiction anywhere. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? No contradiction anywhere, and everything makes sense. Everything is perfect peace. So this woman of valor foresees that day, and so no matter what she's going through, she can laugh. She can laugh no matter what the people in her life are doing or saying or what's happening or no matter what diagnosis she just received from the doctor. No matter, she can laugh. Isn't that amazing? One of the quotes from Miriam Cosman's book, Circle, Arrow, Spiral. I take that back. She wrote that book, but she wrote an article called What on Earth is So Funny? And she says, on a deeper level, laughter is a taste of the world of truth. In this physical world, false hierarchies abound. The haves and the have-nots. We know that. We categorize people. We do. And we put ourselves probably a lot lower than we should. We categorize everybody and everything. She says, in this world, false hierarchies abound, the haves and the have-nots. In a world of truth, divisions and demarcations slide away. They're gone. And so you can laugh. That's what laughter is. But we can get a glimpse of the future. And we can decide to be there in our head. And we can decide to make choices how we live and think and behave according to what we know is true and what is promised and what is happening on a spiritual realm, even if it's invisible to the people around us. So that's why she can laugh. Make sense? Mm-hmm. So our archetype of wholeness, the woman of valor, she doesn't lose sight of how all apparent disharmony and the she doesn't lose sight of how all apparent disharmony will be a symphony of praise to the one who does all things well. She knows that there's going to come a point where there's no more comparisons. Oh, won't that be great? No more misperceptions, because we'll finally know as we are known. So the woman from Scripture. And that's another thing that the sages do with this wonderful text, the Woman of Valor. Each verse not only starts with a different Hebrew letter, but each verse has a woman whose life demonstrates the principles that are hidden in the verse. This is one of my favorites as well. The woman that really, really demonstrates dressing herself with strength, or girding her loins and making her arms strong, is Miriam. Miriam. Remember last week, we looked at the life of Pharaoh's daughter, and her name was Bithia, historically. And we looked at the life of Moses' mother, Jochebed, and how she had to place her baby in a basket and remove her hands to create a space. Well, after she did that, Miriam, Moses' older sister, she takes notice. She looks up, she takes notice, and she sees that there's something to be done, and she follows that basket down the river, and when that baby is taken out, she takes a risk, doesn't she? She puts on strength. She puts on strength, and she steps forward, and she goes, how about if I find a Hebrew mother to nurse that baby? Well, that was risky. And it happened. It happened. So she gets returned to her mother, who gave her up, and she gets to nurse her probably for the next year or so. What an amazing thing. Think of it. But then later, Miriam again demonstrates this huge alert state of preparedness when the people in Egypt are packing up really fast because they're moving out and they're going to leave Egypt. And everybody's packing what they need really quick. And someone looks over and says, Miriam, what is that you're packing? And she says, a tambourine. I don't know about you, but I don't think that I would think to pack tambourine to leave Egypt with Pharaoh's army following me. But why did she pack a tambourine? We know she did because they had instruments at hand when they got to the other side. And she led the celebration. You know why? Because she knew there was going to be a reason to celebrate. She prepared for it. She was so sure there would be a reason to celebrate. She was so able to laugh at the future, even under those circumstances, that she packed a tambourine. Ever since I've learned this principle, I've started doing something new. During times that are particularly challenging for me, I'll think of some small token of trust. And I'll put it where I can see it every day. And when I'm tempted to lose heart or I'm tempted to doubt, I'll remember God's promise. And I'm not trying to twist his arm and tell him how to write the future, but I'm learning to trust in his goodness. So I'll put a token of trust regarding that situation somewhere. And it reminds me that I can laugh at the future and have hope that it's all going to work out. Somehow it's going to work out. You know what? When we begin to consider the possibility that we can choose to put on strength, it changes everything. It changes everything. Because most of us don't believe that it's a choice we can make. We think we're at the mercy of the circumstances, or we think we're at the mercy of our emotions. There's a passage in Deuteronomy 31, verses 7 and 8. Can someone turn there, please? Moses is encouraging the people to be of good courage. He was teaching them, and we are to learn the same as we learn from his words, that we don't need to be ruled by our personalities, by our tendencies, by awareness of challenging circumstances. That's not what we are to be ruled by. We're invited to live a courageous life, and courage puts us in a state of expansion. I want to repeat that. Courage, a choice we make to choose courage, puts our lives in a state of expansion. And the opposite is true. Fear is a state of contraction. How many of you have ever said, I feel like I can't get enough air. I feel like I'm suffocating in this situation. I feel trapped. That's the voice of the enemy. Whenever you feel like you're in a small space, a dark space, a threatening space, and you're trapped, guess what voices you're hearing? Those are the animal voices from this realm over here.
Actually, he's not smiling.
Smiling evilly.
His voice is, you can't. It's too much. You're trapped. You're weak. There's nothing to smile about, certainly nothing to laugh about. It's hopeless. That's the voice. All right? Who found that passage in Deuteronomy 31? Can you read it loud, please?
Then Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the presence of all of Israel, be strong and courageous, for you must go with this people into the land that the Lord swore to our forefathers to give them. And you must divide it among them as their inheritance. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Do not be afraid, but do not be discouraged.
So we could choose to be brave at the very onset. We can choose to be brave at the very onset. There's a verse in Psalm 18, verse 34. It says, "He trains my hands for battle so that my arms can bend a bow of bronze." I love that verse. "He trains my hands for battle so that my arms can bend a bow of bronze." I pass out that picture the very first week of a beautiful woman standing strong, taking aim with strength, bending a bow in order to send an arrow to its intended mark. And remember what the word Torah means? To hit the mark. That's what the word Torah actually means. The word sin, as we mentioned, means literally to miss the mark. And a skilled marksman has to be skilled, practiced, and strong, and decisive. And that's our woman of valor. That's the feminine soul. Isn't that a great image? There's a verse in Isaiah 52:1. It says, "Awake, awake, clothe yourself in strength. O Zion, clothe yourself in beautiful garments." This is the voice of God. He's speaking to his beloved, to Israel, and he says, wake up, and get dressed. Clothe yourself in strength, beautiful garments of strength. So I guess what I'm saying, ladies, is we don't want to be underdressed for life. I have so often dressed myself in the scratchy wool garment of fear and doubt. I have, because that's what I've chosen to put on. And it feels terrible, and it's not that attractive to anyone looking. But what happens is it becomes a familiar garment, and we all have those garments that we tend to feel kind of comfortable in because we're used to wearing them, and you put on something new, and it feels a little stiff and uncomfortable. So at first, putting on strength might feel a little awkward. And you might think, well, I'm kind of familiar and used to that other wool, scratchy garment of fear and doubt. And it's tempting to put it back on again, but don't. As the verse says, awake, clothe yourself in strength. Clothe yourself in beautiful garments. Because I'll tell you what, when you dress in strength, fear begins to slip away. It changes how you feel about yourself on the inside and on the outside. And the world sees it. And they're going to ask you where you shop. And I don't mean dressing yourself in a corporate blouse and a pencil skirt and high heel shoes. They're going to say, how is it that no matter what's happening, you have equanimity? You don't tip. You're not panicked. You're confident. You're a strong woman. Where does that come from? And you can tell them. It's a garment that I choose to put on, but they're not mine. They're his. Remember, it was his armor that he offers to us. It's his. And he says, you put it on. But we have to choose to put it on or not. She dresses herself. She's not passive. She doesn't sit around and mope and say, I'm naked and afraid. Somebody dress me. She gets up and she dresses herself. She takes the initiative and she laughs. There's a quote, the author is anonymous, it says peace. It does not mean to be in a place where there is no noise, trouble, or hard work. It means to be in the midst of those things and still be calm in heart. That's the woman of valor. It doesn't mean that you're in a place where there's nothing happening, because that happens when you're dead. I want to end this first part of our study tonight, this first third, with a beautiful blessing. I read a book called Einstein and the Rabbi. It's a fun book. Kind of different. Not everybody will love it. And this is the blessing. I called to God from my narrowness, and he answered me with a vast expanse. I called to God from my constriction, and he answered me with wide open spaces. I called to God for my need, and he answered me with grace. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't it a different way to think? Isn't it a different way to look at life? It's a great way to think, and it's a great way to look at life. So begin to dress in strength. Choose your garments carefully each and every day. So our next part of our text, the next verse, she perceives that her merchandise is profitable and her lamp does not go out at night. She perceives. She's aware. She takes notice. She's not busy with just distracting herself, entertaining herself. She is alert and she takes notice and nothing gets past her. And she also knows that she's been equipped with every resource and opportunity that is necessary to meet whatever is happening. It's crucial to realize, though, that what she is perceiving and what is she's noticing and the way she's seeing life around her, she's seeing through a perspective of truth. Remember, part of the armor, the central part of the armor is truth. So she sees with truth. Because here's what we do. We see, we notice things. We don't miss much as women, but we tend to see it distorted. What we do is we create images that are untrue. And as I like to say, we hold ourselves ransom to the inevitable disappointment and failure that we imagine, because everything we see tends to be through a distorted view. This is what we do. We imagine how life should be according to our idea, according to these voices down here, and according to what everybody around us is saying. And when we compare, when we look on Facebook and we listen to other social media, and we just, you know, suddenly we have this image of what our life should be, and we create it in our mind, and it's here. And then here's the reality, and the degree of difference between what is real and what is imagined is the degree of our unhappiness. We create our own unhappiness because we project these ideas of what we think our life should look like and what we should be experiencing based on not what's true, not what God has said, but what these other voices are telling us. Because these other voices are telling us that unless you have a certain degree of status and unless you accomplish certain things, especially as a woman, that you're not valuable. And so we create this image of what we have to accomplish and what we have to do and how we have to look. And then here's reality and the degree of difference. Dennis Prager puts it like this: you equals I minus R. Unhappiness equals imagination minus reality.
Say that again.
Unhappiness equals vain imagination minus reality. We create fantasies in our mind about what our ideal life should look like. The messages, the cues that we should be getting are from truth. We need to make sure they're true. So anytime our mind is filled with doubt, fear, a feeling of contraction, a feeling of hopelessness, a feeling of panic, a feeling of I have to perform, we're believing lies. We're not believing truth. And we create a state of contraction for ourselves. You start to see the truth, believe the truth, know the truth, and you live in a very broad place. Okay? So contentment is the result of living a meaningful life guided by truth. It really is. It's an internal mindset and perspective. That is why some people can have everything in place from the rest of our perspective and still be miserable. Always complaining, always upset, always discontent, always frustrated, always whining. And another person can have all kinds of like really legitimate challenges and be completely at peace and content. Because contentment and peace is not dependent on what's going on out here. It's dependent on what's going on in here. And the woman of valor dresses herself with strength. She laughs at the future, and she perceives that what she has in her life, what her husband, what her God has provided for her, is profitable. She knows that it's enough. She knows that it's enough. And she knows that it's exactly right for her at this moment. She doesn't lack anything.
Robin, what did you say contentment was?
It's the result of living a meaningful life guided by truth.
Robin, I have heard it said, comparison is the death of joy.
It is.
Don't compare yourself.
It is. And I think women have a higher tendency to do it. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is?
Because we're romantics.
What did you say?
Because we're romantics.
I think we... Yes, I think we're idealists, and I think the thing in us that wants to live up connect. To potential and to connect and all of those wonderful things can go awry, and we can become very, very discontent. We're going to talk about perfectionism in a few minutes, too. That's a really, really dangerous pit to fall into. So we're a work in progress, and bringing correction to our habit of comparing and fantasizing, procrastinating, withholding gratitude, it's a goal. And that's what we're working on. And you know what? This transformation doesn't occur overnight. It's a journey. It's a journey. There's another, remember the book, The Kitchen Table Wisdom? Mm-hmm. We did that book for a book club. It was so good. Written by Dr. Rachel Raymond. She says, joy seems to be a function of the willingness to accept the whole and to show up to meet whatever is there. That's the woman of valor. You're aware. She perceives. She knows. But she weighs it through a perspective of truth. She knows the truth. She accepts the truth. But she tells herself that she is enough because God's supplied the armor. She dresses herself in strength. She laughs at the future. And she shows up. And it says her lamp doesn't go out at night. What is this lamp? Does this mean she has a nightlight plugged in? Does this mean she has a lamp burning at her bedside? This word lamp is a unique word. And what it is it describes the kind of lamp that the word in the original language describes is the vessel that would hold that little hot ember throughout the night so that in the morning it could be put into the fireplace and reignite the fire. Now, just think about that. She has, or she is, a vessel that holds a flickering flame throughout the long night. What's the long night, ladies? We talked about that last week. It's those times of life when it seems dark longer than it should be, and the sun is concealed, and it doesn't feel like morning's ever going to come. But she has staying power. And she knows that morning will come, and she's faithful throughout the night. She rises while it's still night. Remember, she doesn't wait till morning. She rises up while it's still dark. I'm not talking about physical darkness. I'm talking about that kind of darkness that we've all experienced where you just don't feel like you can move. But she rises up. Did you ever hear the first dish principle? There's this first dish principle that says when you have a mountain, and let's call it dirty dishes, and you say there's too many, I can't do any, I'm not doing any. The first dish principle says just do one. Pick up one plate, sponge it off, rinse it off, dry it off, put it away. Guess what happens after you do one? You think, well, if I did one, I can do two. Take two. Mm-hmm. sponge it off, rinse it off, dry it off. Put, you know what? That wasn't as bad as I thought. There aren't that many left. I'll just do the dishes. We'll do the cups later. Will you get done with the dishes? And you say, well, you know what? Now there's so much more space on the counter. And I'm using this metaphor to describe how life is. Just wash the first dish. Just get yourself enough initiative to rise up, even if it's night. Do the first dish. Take the first step. Make the first decision. We were talking to, Kathy and I met with a young lady last night that I love, and she has told herself that the job that she's in that she hates and makes her cry a lot is all that she has. She's young and she's talented, but her brain is telling her that she's trapped there forever and she has no choices. From over here, we're going, honey, you're not trapped. You have lots of choices. I don't know what to do. I can't. What do I do first? And so we had to undo the lies that she's been believing for so long. And by the time she left, she goes, I have hope. I have hope. She goes, now, remind me what I need to do first. And we gave her a list. And we said, first do this. And when you're done with that, then do this. And then do that. And then call us if you have any questions. And she's like, I have hope. I have hope. Fear causes a state of contraction.
Robin, that reminds me of the Dave Ramsey principle of trying to get out of debt.
Yeah.
These young couples mm-hmm. have thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt that they will never get out of. Mm-hmm. And his plan is baby steps.
Yeah.
You just baby steps. You don't have to look out here to that never, these will never. You just have to take the first, the smallest debt, pay that off. Mm-hmm. Then the next debt. And then, you know, within time, you're making momentum, you're going, it's like, okay, we can do this, and you get all excited, you start. It just, but it's baby, he calls it baby steps.
Yeah.
And that's just what it is, you know, in a financial
yeah.
way to get out of this huge mountain
right.
of debt that does look hopeless.
Remember when you were learning to drive? If you stared at the windshield, you're going to wreck.
Yeah.
If you stare at a block away, you're going to hit the curb or a tree or worse. But you learn to be a good driver. You put your vision just beyond the front of the car, just to the road ahead, and you learn how to make your way safely mm-hmm. one little bit at a time. So you can look at life right up close windshield. You're going to have an accident. You can be looking so far ahead that you're going to go off track. God says, my word is a lamp to your feet and a light to your path. And it lights up the next step. And then the next step. And then the next step. And guess what? Eventually, you're down the whole path. But he's not going to light the whole path. That's not how he's designed this life. Just the next step. But the woman of valor, she knows that. So she dresses herself with strength. She laughs at the future, and she does the next step. And she perceives that her merchandise is profitable. She knows that what she has been given is exactly enough. The power of God is behind every righteous act to perform it. A Jewish lady shared that with me years and years ago. She said, Robin, the power of God is behind every righteous act to perform it. If it's a righteous act that God's requiring of you, his power is provided for you to do it, or it's not your act to do. That's why Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened, I'll give you rest. My yoke is easy. We're yoked with him. The letter for our last verse is the letter that is yoke, and it means life. It's life. I place before you life and death. Choose life. Every decision is a decision between life and death. But it's a decision we make. It's a decision we make in here. Doesn't depend on what's out here. If we can only get that, that's how we can always be dressed in dignity and strength. and her lamp does not go out at night. She is a vessel that holds that little flickering ember. There might be just a little bit of hope left, but she protects it, she holds it, she fans it, and then guess what? At the end of the night, when morning comes, she's ready. And she reignites the fire, and she's ready to go. She didn't let it go out. She didn't let it get smothered. She didn't walk away from it. She nursed it. She nurtured it. She kept it. That's what women do. That's what women of valor do. There's a verse in Psalm 18:28. For you light my lamp. The God, my Lord, my God, illumines my darkness. For you light my lamp. The Lord my God illumines my darkness. And the woman of valor, she knows that morning's coming. There's another verse in Psalm 132:17. It says, I have prepared a lamp for mine anointed. It's the same lamp. I have prepared a lamp for mine anointed. He has prepared a lamp for you to keep that flicker of light and life and hope through the night until morning comes. I want us all to turn in Matthew 25, verses 1 through 13. Probably familiar with this, but we're going to look at it with new eyes. It's a provocative parable, and it's told about lamps. Let's read it. Matthew chapter 25, the first 13 verses. And this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. Kingdom of heaven isn't where we go after we die. The kingdom of heaven is how we're intended to live life here as royalty. Okay, here and now. We're invited to live this life here and now. We're invited to be women of valor. Here and now. Okay? Then the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, 5 of them were wise or prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the prudent took oil in flasks along with their lamps, so they were prepared, weren't they? Now, while the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy, tired of waiting, and they began to sleep. But at midnight, there was a shout, "Behold, the bridegroom! Come out to meet him." Then all those virgins rose, and they trimmed their lamps. But the foolish said to the prudent, "Oh, no, give us some of your oil. Our lamps are going out." All of a sudden, they realized they didn't have oil in their lamps. So they turned to the wise ones and they said, "Give us some of yours." Now, here's where I want you to really pay attention. The wise virgins answered, "No." And the first time I read this, I thought, well, that's kind of mean. But it doesn't call them mean virgins. It calls them wise virgins. And you know why they're wise? Because they know that they can't provide oil for anyone's lamp but their own. And neither can we. The prudent answered, "No, there will not be enough for us. You go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves. We have to provide our own oil for our own lamps. We can't even provide oil for our kids' lamps. We can tell them where to get it. We can show them how it's done, but we can't fill their lamps with oil. And if there's any frustration in my life, it's that I can't just accumulate oil and then just siphon it into my kids' brains. Doesn't work that way. And while they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. Doesn't that seem harsh? Later, the other virgins also came saying, "Lord, Lord, open up for us." But he answered, he said, "I don't know you." That word "no," it means the kind of no between a bridegroom and a bride. It means the intimacy known between a bridegroom and a bride. And he says, you're not known to me. Isn't that an amazing parable? So I can only provide oil for my own lamp, but I can encourage others to go to the source and get it for themselves. So we're to have our own lamps trimmed and filled with oil, and we nurse a hot ember that can be rekindled when the sun rises. Yeshua says, be dressed in readiness and keep your lamps lit. That's in Luke 12:35. Be dressed in strength and readiness and keep your lamps lit. It's a very sobering passage. So how do we refill our own lamp? What do you think? This is kind of a metaphorical, kind of abstract language. How do we literally refill our own lamps? What do you think? Yeah. By spending time offshore. Mm-hmm. By spending time offshore. By recognizing the source of our life and nurturing an intimacy with our Creator. There's no other way. And when the time comes to meet our bridegroom, it's not the time to panic and rush around and try to make it work. We don't want to be cut out. There's a beautiful verse. Long been one of my favorites in Isaiah 42:3. It says, a bruised reed he does not break, and a flickering flame he does not snuff out. So we might be bent and bruised, and we might be barely flickering, but if we go to him and allow him and surrender to him, he will nurse that flame back to life. I promise. So in thinking about a woman who demonstrated this, I decided to choose her this time. And I chose the mother of Jesus, the mother of Yeshua, Miriam. Because I started picturing how she literally protected the very light of the world in her own womb. Talk about nighttime. The man that she was betrothed to considered putting her away. Imagine that kind of pressure. Nobody believed her. Everybody just assumed she was some kind of wanton young woman. And here she'd been secretly visited by an angel and told that she was carrying the Messiah. Right? Society then was no different than it is now, and people just jumped to conclusions. Can you imagine that kind of pressure? Can you imagine what she went through? Her own parents probably even doubted her. But within her womb, she carried the very light of the world. And think about the courage that it required for her to see that light snuffed out, hung on a cross, put in a tomb. You talk about having to don strength and dignity and laugh at the future. I'm sure she had her moments. Sure enough, she was able to carry that light to warning. Yes.
So when I was reading and studying some of the words, how she perceives that her merchandise is good, I think it's really awesome that you say that that's the mother of Jesus, because Luke 18:19, in regards to good, why do you call me good? Jesus answered, no one is good except God alone. Mm.
No one is good except God alone. You know, when she was carrying the Savior and she was under all of that just unimaginable kind of stress, she had to choose to be strong. And she had to choose to have faith. And she had to choose not to doubt that what she had heard and seen, she had heard and seen. And she was able to pray this following prayer. It's beautiful. It's in Luke chapter 1, verse 46. This is what she says. Instead of pacing and stressing and formulating a defense to all of those accusations, this is what she prayed. She says, "My soul exalts the Lord, and my spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior. For he has had regard for the humble state of his bondslave. For behold, from this time on, all generations will count me blessed. For the Mighty One has done great things for me. The Holy and holy is his name, and his mercy is upon generation after generation toward those who fear him." In other words, she's saying, what has happened to me will happen generation after generation after generation. "He has done mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who were proud in the thoughts of their heart. He has brought down rulers from their thrones. He has exalted those who were humble. He has filled the hungry with good things. He has sent away the rich empty-handed. He has given help to Israel, his servant, in remembrance of his mercy, as he spoke to our fathers, to Abraham, and to his descendants forever." She had a bigger context than what was going on in her own little life, didn't she? She had a way bigger context. And that's the only way that we can put on strength and that we can dress ourselves in strength and dignity and laugh at the future. If our context is bigger than what we are experiencing in this physical realm, it's the only way. One of the things that my husband will say to me sometimes when I'm feeling very constricted and fearful, he'll say, "Robin, peel back the edges. Peel back the edges of this. You're not seeing enough. You're not seeing it big enough." Sometimes, I've shared this with you before, I tend to get the most fearful in the middle of the night. Sometimes when it's dark, it doesn't seem like morning will ever come, figuratively or literally. Like 2 a.m. tends to be my witching hour at times. And I'll literally go outside and I'll literally look at the stars and I'll literally think, okay, peel back the edges. Look at the big picture and remember truth. And I start to feel expansion. And I start to feel courage. And I start to remember the truth.
Robin, I love that you brought up Yeshua's mother, because she's my favorite. But then thinking about last week when you talked about Jochebed having to let her baby go. Okay, so Miriam birthed him, raised him, knowing that he's the Messiah, and then he's dead. Crucified.
Can you imagine?
And then the rock.
Talk about disillusionment. Sealed. It's sealed. He's in there. He's behind that rock. Impossible, right? No. So many of our hopes seem sealed up by a rock.
Yeah. Jochebed, she, you know, conjured her mind everything that could happen to Moses going down, and it didn't. But Miriam had his whole life, all of his promises, all of God's promises, that he is the Messiah, and he's hanging on a tree.
Can you imagine?
There's a rock in front of him. How do you get over that?
How do you get over that?
If you're not living in truth. And I believe she was. Somehow.
Do you remember the first week when I said one of the images I really, really, really love is a tree? Yeah. Because a tree is the perfect example. And trees were a concept that God had before he made a physical tree. The concept existed before the first trees were ever in this world. But the most significant part of a tree, the hidden part of the tree below the ground, is where the tree gets its nourishment and its strength. I read a book recently that said when Miriam went to the garden and saw that stone was rolled away, they turned and they saw Yeshua and they mistook him for a gardener. And I had never noticed that before. They thought at first, oh, he's here taking care of the garden. And I thought, that harkens back to Eden. It harkens back to Eden, doesn't it? It's so amazing. There's the physical part, the spiritual part, the hidden part.
If our vessel or lamp is stuffed to the brim with our own insecurities and doubts, there will not be enough room for God's eternal light. Okay? If we put off buying the oil necessary to maintain an internal flame, which is the very purpose of a lamp, we're going to be found out on the day that our bridegroom returns for his beloved bride. How do we fill our lamps with oil, ladies? It's by seeking God's face. That's how we do it. There's a verse in Proverbs 16:15. It says, in the light of the king's countenance, there is life. In the light of his face, that's where we have life. That's where we seek and fill our lamps. We're only going to touch on this next verse because we don't have as much time as it really requires. But the word says that she puts her hands to the distaff and her hands hold the spindle. Now, those of us who've been around Beth Tikkun for a while know that there's a scriptural principle that the left and the right denote the left being the physical and the right being the spiritual. There's a verse in Isaiah 48:13. It says, surely my hand founded the earth, my right hand has spread out the heavens. When I call to them, they stand together. And there are many other verses that indicate the left and the right are pictures of the physical realm and the spiritual realm. So here we have a human form, we have a left side, we have a right side. God calls us to walk in balance. And anything we create, anything we do, requires a left hand and a right hand. The physical isn't bad, it's required, it's necessary. We have to bring it together in conjunction with the spiritual, and together we can create, we can hold, we can accomplish. With balance. So, I don't know if any of you have ever watched someone spin wool, but there is a distaff and there's a spindle. And I went online and I looked and looked and I looked and I studied this and I studied this and I noticed something really fascinating. Laura Ross shared this years ago and I had to go and review it because I had forgotten the details. But what happens is the distaff takes the raw material, okay? It's either wool or flax, and it's gathered together with the left hand on this tool called the distaff, and it's a very unrefined, unspun material. And then what the spinner does is with her hand, she pulls the material downward to the right, and she wraps it on a longer spool called the spindle. So we have the left hand pulling down to the right, and then we have something happening in the right hand over here, and what is happening is this raw, unrefined material on the distaff, when pulled to the right, becomes something usable, something beautiful, something refined, something that can be used to weave a garment. Is that crazy? Obviously, if you're left-handed, the process is reversed. But that's the basic way that this happens. And our woman of valor puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. So she uses her left hand. She takes what's raw and unrefined, those physical things, and then she pulls it with her right hand into the spiritual realm, and she makes it into something, and she brings it into potential. You're saying, Robin, that's all fine and good, but what are you talking about? Let's think of an example. Let's take a dollar bill. Let's say you earn it, your husband earned it, it comes into your household, it's a piece of paper that has been stamped with an image, and it's pretty useless unless you want to wrap a cigarette or something. What are you going to do with this piece of paper? Okay. You take that and you pull it down into the spiritual realm. And as a woman of valor, you turn it into something that people are blessed with. You turn it into a meal. You turn it into a home. You turn it into a gift. You turn it into something that represents your heart and your life, and you share it. Until you do that, it's pretty useless. Money is an abstract thing, and it's not good for anything until you turn it into something. So the husband in this whole passage is the one sitting at the gates with the elders of the land, providing for his bride behind the scenes, and she doesn't miss any of these things. Remember our verse? It says in our previous verse, she perceives that all of her merchandise is valuable and profitable. She knows what to do with it, and she does it. And she takes it, and she pulls it, and she refines it, and she spins it, and she turns it into something. One of the words for distaff is kishor, and it means talent. Literally, the things that God has put in your life that are potential, but they can be squandered, they can remain raw and unrefined in the left hand, or they can be pulled by the right hand, spun into something beautiful, and invested into other people. It's truly amazing. Long life is in wisdom's right hand, and in her left are riches and honor. That's a verse from Proverbs 3:16. Long life denotes the quality of kingdom life that God desires for his people, right? And in her left hand are riches and honor. Even her physical life is surrounded by honor and riches. That's the woman of valor. So in chapter 19 of Revelation, where we'll end tonight, we get a glimpse of a future event that we're all destined to experience. How amazing is that? We see the marriage of the Lamb when the bride has made herself ready. She has dressed herself. And what has she dressed herself with? Let's turn to chapter 19 of Revelation and see. It's Revelation 19, verse 8. And this goes right along with the virgins meeting the bridegroom and having their lamps filled with oil. Or not, depending on what they choose. And it says, let us rejoice and be glad, in verse 7, and give the glory to him, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his bride has made herself ready. She wasn't passive. She didn't wait for someone else to dress her. She didn't show up naked. She made herself ready. It was given to her to clothe herself. How many different ways does God have to tell us? It was given to her to clothe herself in what? Fine linen, bright and clean. For what is the fine linen?
Righteous acts.
It's her righteous acts. It's how she lives her life. It's what she's done. It's what she takes from the invisible, unrefined realm and pulls it in and brings it into reality and fruition to bless everybody in her world. The left and the right. So who's an example of someone who did this? Esther. Esther is the woman that we think of. She had every reason to discount herself. She was an orphan and an exile in a strange land. How could she possibly make a difference? How could she possibly make a difference? Do you know, even her physical beauty became a tool to change a nation? But she didn't employ this tool of her own beauty until she had spent days in prayer and fasting. Esther 4:16 said, before she went before the king, she called her people together and she said, we're going to fast and we're going to pray. Yeah, she anointed herself and she dressed herself, and she was a beautiful, beautiful woman physically, but she dressed herself with strength and she dressed herself with dignity. She filled her lamp and she certainly spun a garment. So as we consider the importance of seeking to live to potential, it's really important that you don't hear me saying that we strive for perfection. Because living up to potential and being brave and living out the life that God has for us is not the same as perfectionism. And the reason I bring this up is because we all have tendencies, some of us more than others, but perfectionism kills life. It literally kills life. There's a short passage I'm going to read. It's called The Gifts of Imperfection, this book. It's written by Brené Brown. It's pretty good. Just a short paragraph. It says, perfection is not the same thing as striving to be your best. Perfectionism is not about healthy achievement and growth. Perfectionism is the belief that if we live perfect, look perfect, act perfect, we can minimize or avoid the pain of blame, judgment, and shame. Listen to this. It's a shield. It's a shield. Perfectionism is a 20-ton shield that we lug around thinking it will protect us, when in fact it's the thing that's really preventing us from taking flight. People often attempt to live their lives backwards. They try to have more things or more money in order to do more of what they want so they'll be happier. The way it actually works is the reverse. We must first know who you really are, then do what you really need to do in order to have what you really want. So, neither perfectionism or self-degradation reflects God's image. This woman of valor, she knows that whatever happens, it happens for a reason. She knows how to put on strength and dignity. She knows how to bring potential out of every situation. She knows how to fill whatever space there is with life. But it's not for a shield for her own self-image. So in case you struggle with that, it might be time to really confront it. And to end this evening, this woman of valor, she knows that whatever happens is for a reason. That life's twists and turns are designed to steer her in the direction that God wants her to go. She trusts that there's a deeper purpose for all that she's experiencing, and she opens herself to knowing what it is. She loosens her grip on her story, recognizing that it is only the outer wrapping of a much more profound tale. Make sense? Talked about a lot tonight. Really, we should only try to do 2 verses per night. I'm trying to squeeze in 3. But hopefully it's whetting your appetite. This woman of valor hopefully is starting to become more and more defined in your heart and in your mind. Hopefully you're beginning to get stronger in your soul so that you can hear the voices that God is speaking to your mind more clearly, and the voices that have been shouting to your brain from the physical realm trying to discourage you are going to become more manageable, and your soul's going to grow. And you're going to realize that femininity is beautiful, and it's strong, it's brave, it's powerful. And that God has every single detail of your life designed for your good, because he has a divine curriculum, and there are no mistakes. There are no mistakes. I think it's time that we start living like we know this is true. Don't you?